Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us again on Streamlines, your source for water knowledge. I'm your host, John McMain.
And I'm Anthony Bly.
And Anthony, this is episode 17. It's the third in our four-part series about phosphorus, or four-part mini-series, or whatever term we want to apply to that. And if you haven't been able to listen in the last few weeks where we introduce and discuss phosphorus, first of all, shame on you. And second of all, please go check them out, because today we're continuing our phosphorus talk and kind of bringing the uplifting part of things that we can actually do about phosphorus. And if you remember, we talked to Dr. Lindsay Peace with University of Minnesota and Dr. Chad Penn with the USDA Agricultural Research Service. And today we're going to kick it off with Lindsay Peace recapping some of our previous discussion on what we can do about phosphorus loss through tile.
Yeah, one of the first things I would say is to make sure that the nutrients are balanced and, you know, thinking about getting that right rate. You know, one of the really quick fixes, I guess I would say, for phosphorus in the tilings is just not to overapply phosphorus and to make sure that you're following, you know, the recommended rates for your area. And those are a little bit different if you're in a high pH soil or a low pH soil, or depending on what crop you're growing. So there's not really no like one hard and fast rule for how much phosphorus you should apply. But if you're above the point where your crop is going to show a yield boost from adding phosphorus, then you should not apply anymore, because we know that once you get above that limit, then your environmental risk really goes up. So that's kind of your first step, is just make sure you're not over applying, but that's usually not enough to prevent all the phosphorus loss. So, I mean, kind of like nitrogen loss, like balancing the nutrient checkbook, I guess is one way to think of it, is the first step. But then oftentimes we need a little bit of help getting rid of the extra phosphorus that you might lose anyway, because like I said, it's not a perfect system. And yeah, I think some of the ways that I would reduce phosphorus in the tile drainage, phosphorus removal structures are one way to do it. Controlled drainage can also be a good solution, because you're just limiting the number of days that you're dripping phosphorus out of those tile lines. Yeah, I would say those are probably the two best ways that we know of. I know there's a lot of bioreactor research going on right now, but I don't think there's a big yes or no on how bioreactors are treating phosphorus or not. Probably depends on what material you're using.
All right. So Lindsay started off with balance, and I talk about that a lot, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
from an engineer perspective.
Correct.
And your perspective is a little more nuanced than that.
Yeah. It's a sufficiency level.
Okay.
We're taught about nutrients and probably water as well as being kind of like the staves of the barrel, and the most limiting one is what's limiting our productivity. And so we address that one.
Sure.
It's not that we're balancing one against the other in sure. some certain ratio.
Yep.
It's a sufficiency level approach.
So if we limit production, if we limit growth by any factor, any variable,
correct,
either one that we control or one we don't control, then we end up with an imbalance.
Well, I guess you could say it that way.
Okay. I like that word balance, apparently.
I don't know what we're balancing. I would just say, what are we balancing?
So I would say we're balancing what comes in and what gets used by the crop.
Okay.
But, I mean, I like that point you bring up, that the what gets used by the crop isn't necessarily only dependent on what we put on. It's dependent on the whole system.
Correct.
And the production of that whole system.
Correct. See, there's some in the nutrient world that use a balanced approach.
Okay.
So that's why we get, those of us in the sufficiency world get excited about when someone says balance.
So tell me more about the balanced
approach. Well, your ratios of your nitrogen and your sulfur and your potassium there, and then the cations, the balanced cation approach, it doesn't come from the land-grant university.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we define what we're talking about here with balance as the amount of input we have, we want to balance that with the amount of input that's used by the plants.
Yeah, I think you're saying you just don't want to put on more than you need.
Yeah. Well said.
Okay.
Concise, well said. So I mean, that's kind of the first step. If we do it better in the field, then we have less issues downstream. We're more efficient with how much we use versus how much we put on.
Right.
But like Lindsay said, it's not a perfect system. It's a leaky system. So then downstream, we have to have some safety net, as we've talked about with bioreactors and everything else, to catch whatever comes out. And so nitrogen and phosphorus, as we've been hammering home, they behave differently, they move differently, they cause different issues. And the way that we remove those is different. And so Lindsay mentioned phosphorus removal structures, and that is a specialty of Dr. Chad Penn's. And so I'm going to let him discuss what a phosphorus removal structure is, and then we're going to talk about that, kind of the safety net for phosphorus.
Okay, so a phosphorus removal structure is a giant landscape scale filter, and it's a filter specifically designed to remove dissolved phosphorus from flowing water. It's kind of like a giant Brita filter. Put them in a landscape in locations where you have high concentrations of phosphorus in flow, and where you're able to channel that flow directly into this filter, which contains media that has a high affinity for phosphorus. And these media can be rich in either some sort of calcium minerals or iron and aluminum. They may remove phosphorus by different mechanisms. Some of them require different amounts of time of contact with the water to remove the phosphorus. But, you know, in its essence, it's really simple. It's just a giant filter.
So we have a way that we can remove phosphorus from the system. But if we think back to last week's episode, it's a complex system. It's a dynamic system. And so whenever we say, you know, basically a giant filter, it's pretty straightforward.
Right.
But the nuance comes in with the different variables that will affect that removal. And so if we think about things that could affect it, so I'm going to let Chad really get into that, but I want to go through quickly some of the variables that we talked about last week. Water, so concentration of phosphorus in the water, concentration of phosphorus in the soil.
Yep.
Kind of the contact time as water flows through the soil.
Yep.
Characteristics of the soil, so maybe CEC or cation exchange capacity.
Soil pH.
Soil pH, thank you. The chemistry and the physics of the soil and
correct.
The water.
Yes, all very important.
All very important. Okay, so here's Chad really breaking down what we need to think about for a phosphorus removal structure.
First thing you need to know is some characteristics about your site of interest. Specifically, how much annual flow volume do you expect? You know, a lot of tile, if we're talking about tile drains, you know, if we're talking about a 20-acre field, you know, you're talking anywhere from like 1 to 4 million gallons a year. And you also want to know what the peak flow rate is expected annually, because you want to design your structure to be able to handle, to be able to treat the peak, the highest flow rates. Like we mentioned earlier, hey, most of the phosphorus loss from tile drains, 90% of the year is negligible, but that 10% of the time you lose a giant load. And guess what? It happens to be when the flow rates are the highest. So if it's, you know, 100 gallons per minute, 200 gallons per minute, 300 gallons per minute, it does you no good if you build a structure that can only handle 50 gallons a minute. And that's what it's treating that negligible water 90% of the year. And then when you get the big flows that are coming that deliver almost all your phosphorus, and it's delivering at 300 gallons per minute, when you do the math, you know, your filter's not going to be able to treat very much phosphorus. You got to get the water to flow through the media. Knowing your flow, your peak flow rate is really important. And it's fairly straightforward for tile drains, because I just assume the worst case scenario. I take the slope of the pipe in the field, and I look at the diameter of the pipe and the type of pipe that it is, you know, whether it's corrugated or PVC or whatever it is. And I just calculate what the maximum flow rate could be coming out of it. I assume the worst. The other thing you need to know about hydrology is the obvious one is what the dissolved peak concentration is. You know, one thing I'll encourage people to do, if they can, like go out and take some grab samples. And take your grab samples, again, I sound like a broken record here, but take them from your peak flow events. Take them from the big flow events. Don't grab them from the base flow, because you're hardly going to get anything. That's going to be more representative of your target of what you want to treat. And if you can't do that, then you can estimate dissolved P in your flow based on soil phosphorus concentrations, based on your Malek 3. So what I always tell people is, you want to treat, you only want to treat tiles that in which the source soil has at least 100 milligrams per kilogram of malic 3 phosphorus. That's a rule of thumb. Obviously, that's going to vary depending on the conditions, but that's just kind of it's a good starting point. So, you know those main three things about your hydrology. You're ready for the next step for doing a design. Next thing you need to know is you got to know something about the P sorption material. So you got to find a P sorption material. And a lot of them are industrial byproducts that you can get, and they vary tremendously. So you got to know something about them. They have to be accessible, and you have to know about their ability to remove phosphorus. So most people aren't going to know that because it requires testing in the laboratory with flow through cells. So that's something with the software that we develop called P-TRAP people can use to conduct a design. You don't have to be an engineer to use that and to conduct a design. But one thing we provide on that is the characterization of these different P-sorption materials, specifically a mathematical description of their ability to remove phosphorus under flowing conditions. So, we can't expect the conservationist who's more likely to be designing these things to be able to conduct these experiments on their materials. So, with that software, I provide an entire library they can look up, choose the P-sorption material of interest and say, okay, here's the equation that describes phosphorus removal under flowing conditions under certain inflow concentrations. And here's what it is under different retention times, time of contact. And they can just plug it right in and go from there. So you got to know something about essentially the ability of that material to remove phosphorus. And you need to know something about its physical characteristics, specifically its ability to conduct flow. Because like I mentioned before, if you can't get water to flow through it, you can't treat it or remove phosphorus. So you got to know you need measurements of the hydraulic conductivity, measurements of its porosity, bulk density, things of that nature. Those all go into the design. In addition to that, so characteristics of the site, hydrology, PSMs, their physical and chemical characteristics, specifically the ability to remove phosphorus. You need to choose some goals. You can choose to design these things for different lifetimes. And essentially, how long do you want the filter to last and how much phosphorus do you want it to remove over that time period? That's something that the user has to make a decision on. But those are the main things. The other thing actually on site characteristics I forgot to mention that is necessary is they need to have some measurement of the hydraulic head at the site or the ability of gravity to essentially push water through the media, because these are not running off of pumps. They work through just gravitational flow of water through it. So you need to know something about if it's a tile. You need to know something about the depth, the distance between where the tile outlets into a ditch and the bottom of that ditch.
What do you think?
That's a lot of stuff.
You think you could do that?
Yeah, I can find ways to do that, but the normal, most people are going to need help.
Okay.
Yep.
So I like the way he broke it down, but it is a lot of stuff.
No, it sounds really simple and straightforward, but the P-sorption material part is just a little... That's heavy.
It is heavy. And so one tricky thing, too, is depending on the source of the particular P-sorption material, it could change some of those characteristics.
Correct.
I don't want to say it'll change them a lot, but, yeah, depending on, they might have more calcium sites. They might have more. Yeah, so it could change the chemical makeup of that
right.
particular material.
Exactly.
But in general... I think you can get close on a lot of things, but I agree the specific characteristics of those materials can make it tricky. One thing that we've worked with in the past is fly ash. And fly ash, it was used specifically for phosphorus removal, and this was done in a bioretention cell or a couple in Oklahoma. And what we did was actually mix, I think it was only 5% of the media was fly ash. Because if you get any more than that, then you start hitting what Chad was talking about of this. You need the hydraulic conductivity. You have
to flow through it.
Right. And what good is it at that point?
Right.
And so fly ash is not a good phosphorus removal structure material. But in our case, since it was a soil mixture, we put some sand plugs in there to ensure hydraulic conductivity. And it worked because you have those sorption sites.
Correct.
But, yeah, you got to have the balance, has to be able to flow through, and you also have to have the chemical characteristics. And then the other thing I like that he brought out was really you want to target areas of risk. So one of the things we talked about in the last couple episodes is one of the challenges with phosphorus is it's in such low concentrations. So it's hard to justify putting in a big old filter that's only going to, you know, take out a little drip of phosphorus.
Right.
So
these are pretty high soil tests. He suggested 100 ppm.
Yeah.
That's pretty high.
It's pretty high. And so it's those kind of really risky areas that we would target these,
right,
these systems for.
Yep.
The actual, I guess, structure itself is it could be like a septic tank almost.
Yes.
That type of thing, concrete or
plastic.
Or plastic, potentially. I have seen some that are some type of metal. He's put them in a lot of different situations, Chad has. So there's a lot in the literature kind of on the performance of these things. But yeah, so basically you build the structure, you put the material in there. Again, you got to have it with a high enough hydraulic conductivity that you get throughput or these really high peak flows. Otherwise, you're just bypassing the system.
Right. Yep.
And then to get back to the question about design and kind of the feasibility of maybe a non-engineer, someone with a different area of expertise doing the design on these, Chad referenced the P-Trap software, phosphorus trap software, and what that is, and I'll let him talk about this, but it's basically a way that you can go from start to finish through the design for phosphorus removal structures. So I'm going to let him talk about that. And then I also asked him kind of some of the projects he's thinking about. And so he had some cool stuff going on, but this is what he had to say about P-Trap and then his broader projects.
That used to be the old Frog software, if you recall. I don't know if you ever knew about that. And now it's online. It's called P-Trap. Now we had to change the name. Phosphorus Transport Reduction App. It's free. And, you know, you can just Google P-Trap and USDA ARS. You'll find it. There's a landing site for it. From there, you can just click and go directly to the software. There's a library database on there for different PSMs. So if you don't have the physical and chemical characteristics for your PSMs, you click on this. And we've got basically all the flow through experiments I've ever done, which is near 1,000. It's all on there. You can, it's sorted. You can search through it for different PSMs that you might have available to you and stick it in there and do different runs for different scenarios and see what a filter would look like under different conditions, different PSMs. Makes it real easy to do an economic analysis. I'm hoping people will use it for that. And, you know, we've got a new Purdue fact sheet, you know, it's like 2 pages, standard number 782. So if someone wants to build one, you know, if it's cost shared in your state, it is in Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, Texas, Wisconsin. You know, I don't know about other states. I don't know about Illinois or South Dakota, or Iowa. I'm not sure, but it's considered an interim standard. Hopefully it'll become permanent. But anyway, we are building, right now we're designing and we're going to start building a mobile P removal structure. It'll be on a flatbed. And the idea is that, you know, hook up to the back of a truck and we can haul it somewhere for a field day demonstration. And, you know, if there's like a pond or a ditch or something or anywhere we can throw a pump into water, pump that water into the P removal structure, we can do a demonstration for a field day. So, you know, people can't come to the P removal structure. We can bring it to them.
So I want to start with the P-Trap software. So does that allay any of your concern, 1,000 PSMs that he's gone through?
No, I mean, it works.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. If we have a situation where we have a media that we don't know those, you know, that library of 1,000 PSMs, we can at least probably get close.
We can get close.
Yeah.
Yep. That's so, for sure.
And then that other mobile P removal structure, that's pretty cool to me. Hopefully, I don't know, maybe you could do a national tour or something and come out to South Dakota. And I don't know. I'd like to see that at a field day. Or maybe we could just build our own. That'd be fun.
Yeah,
too.
Sure. But we can do that. So why doesn't somebody just provide PSM?
Yeah, phosphorus sourcing media.
Yeah.
There's really no, I'd say it's a market thing. There's not really a market for PSMs. Most of these are industrial byproducts, steel shavings.
You just have to find it on your
iron
own.
Iron slag. Yeah.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
People finding those things.
I think that is a challenge. And then, yep. I mean, going back to the amount that's leaving, like it's right. people don't recognize it as an issue until the lake's green. And yep. they're like, oh, phosphorus. Shoot.
Why yep. didn't we think about that?
I don't think about that. And then the other thing that he's talked about today and then the last episode, it's hard to get the peaks because you got to be out there kind of with the rain event. So we're doing the project we're doing, we're establishing a baseline for nitrate and orthophosphate load out of tile in eastern South Dakota. And it has been hard because we're kind of on a sampling schedule. We're not necessarily trying to hit peaks. And so we don't necessarily see the phosphorus coming right. out. So
you got to be ready to go at all hours of the day, every day.
Right. So that makes it a challenge to, again, kind of demonstrate the need for it. But, hey, maybe if there's some fields with high soil test P that we identify, it might be a good place to start for a pilot in South Dakota.
Correct. Yep. Has a lot of promise.
Yeah. So I think that's a good discussion for today. We'll stop it there in the next episode, talk some more about options we have for phosphorus removal. I'm John McMain.
And I'm Anthony Vly.
And we'll catch you next time on Streamlines, your source for water knowledge.